Adi Leela, Chapter 16. All glories to Lord Gaurasundara, the friend of the meek and poor. All glories to the husband of Srimati Lakshmi Devi. He is the omnipotent Supreme Lord, the maintainer and controller of everyone and everything. All glories to you, Sri Gaura Hari, for you descended to protect your devotees. All glories to Gaurachandra. He is the personification of the holy name, the supreme friend, and the absolute truth. All glories to Lord Gaurachandra and his devotees. One is elevated to the platform of pure devotional service simply by hearing his transcendental pastimes sincerely. The transcendental topics narrated in the Adi Khanda of this book are like a stream of pure nectar, for they describe Lord Gaurachandra's enchanting pastimes. The Supreme Lord of the Vaikuntha planets lived in Navadvip as a householder, teaching his students. He had appeared specifically to reveal and propagate the process of pure devotional service to the Supreme Lord, but it was his wish that no one should know his true identity. The entire human society was totally devoid of any spiritual aspirations. They were immersed in base and perverted enjoyments of the body. Those who held discourses on the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam were scarcely better, for they did not instruct people on the essence of those scriptures, the congregational chanting of the holy name of the Lord. Seeing the hopeless plight of the living entities, the Vaishnav devotees of the Lord often met together, away from the public view, to clap and chant the holy name in ecstasy. The materialistic people of Nadia continually criticized the devotees, saying, "What is the purpose of howling so loudly? After all, I am Brahma, and the Absolute resides within me. So why discriminate between master and servant?" Others angrily said, "They beg food to fill their bellies, and they call out, 'Hari, Hari, let us break down their doors and smash their houses.'" The devotees were discouraged by these derogatory remarks, and the fact that they had no one to complain to made their dismay even greater. Wherever they looked, the devotees found the people devoid of devotion to the Supreme Lord. They simply cried to Lord Krishna and lamented the plight of human society. About this time, Srila Haridas Thakur came to Navadvip. His body glowed with pure devotion for the Supreme Lord. Now I will narrate the wonderful activities of Srila Haridas Thakur. Whoever hears this narration will receive the full shelter of Lord Krishna. Srila Haridas Thakur was born in a village called Burdwan. And because of his presence there, many people became purified and took up the chanting of the holy name. After some years, he left his village and traveled to a place near the river Ganga. He finally settled in the village of Pulia near Shantipur. Advaitacharya Prabhu was overjoyed to meet Srila Haridas Thakur in Navadvip and expressed his joy by roaring loudly. Haridas Thakur was similarly swept away by the waves of ecstatic love of Godhead in the transcendental company of Advaita Acharya Prabhu. Srila Haridas Thakur passed his time wandering on the banks of the Ganga, chanting the name of the Supreme Lord Krishna. Haridas had absolutely no attraction for material enjoyment. The holy name of Lord Krishna continuously vibrated on his tongue, creating an extraordinary beauty about his mouth. Never for a moment did he feel any apathy towards his chanting of the holy name of Krishna. He remained absorbed, tasting the nectar of devotional service. He occasionally danced in ecstasy or cried in lamentation, while other times he lay still in a state of unconsciousness. Sometimes he spoke in mysterious languages and later explained the meaning of his words. All the ecstatic symptoms of love of Krishna were manifest in him. Profuse crying, horripilation, laughing, fainting, perspiring, etc. It was common to see Srila Das Thakur dancing while he sang the glories of Lord Krishna's name. People would gather around him just to see the unrestricted tears of love of Godhead that flowed profusely from his eyes, drenching his entire body. Even the strictest atheist marveled at his behavior. Horripilation swelled across his body like thousands of blooming flowers, and even Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva were amazed by his devotion. In the village of Puglia, even the ritualistic Brahmins were sincerely impressed, if not astonished, by Srila Das Thakur's spiritual ecstasies. The saint was held in full respect by the people of the village, and having won their trust, he lived there quite peacefully. He bathed daily in the Ganga and roamed freely, chanting the Lord's holy name. The local Muslim authority, known as the Qazi, became envious of Haridas Thakur's popularity and reported to the Nawab, "This man is acting like a Hindu. Arrest him and punish him appropriately." The envious words of the sinful Qazi sparked an immediate response from the equally sinful Nawab, and Haridas Thakur was arrested and brought forth. Having received the mercy of Lord Krishna, Haridas had no fear of the Muslim authorities, nor even of death itself. With the name of the Lord on his lips, Haridas appeared before the Nawab. When devotees and other pious persons in the locality of the Nawab's palace heard that the Saint Haridas was coming, they were extremely happy. But when they subsequently learned that he was coming as a captive of the Muslim ruler, they were horrified. Previously, many religious people had been terrorized and incarcerated by the Muslims. Those prisoners were happy to learn that Haridas might be joining them. His presence in their miserable situation would certainly eradicate their suffering. The prisoners even requested the prison wardens to allow them unrestricted association with Srila Haridas. When Srila Thakur was brought into the prison, he looked compassionately at all the prisoners, who immediately prostrated themselves at his lotus feet. His long, graceful arms, which extended to his knees, his lotus eyes, and his charming moon-like face enchanted everyone. They offered their most sincere respects to the saint, and love for Krishna stirred in their hearts. Srila Haridas Thakur was pleased with the tremendous devotion which had grown in the hearts of the prisoners, and he blessed them, "Just remain as you are." But the miserable prisoners could not grasp the depth of that blessing, and they felt quite dejected. Haridas could see the misunderstanding and compassionately explained himself, "My blessing to you is that you will remain as you are, but please do not feel dejected. I could never wish you any misfortune. I simply desire that the love you now feel for Krishna should always remain the same. From now on, chant Lord Krishna's name and constantly remember his pastimes, inspiring one another to retain his devotion. Violence and tyranny are absent in the spiritual world, so sincerely cry out for Krishna's help and constantly think of him. When you are released from this prison, do not return to your old materialistic ways, nor associate with degraded or sinful people, because one can never cultivate love for the Supreme Lord Krishna by living a mundane life. You should know for certain that Krishna is unobtainable by the materialistic person. A materially engrossed mind is shaped by unwanted, mischievous desires. The attachment for wife, children, family, and other such illusions brings about destruction. If by divine arrangement any person reaches the platform of pure devotion toward Krishna, certain realizations dawn on him, and he gradually becomes detached from material life, giving himself instead to the worship of the Supreme Lord. If that person returns again to his materialistic life, his mind will become contaminated by capricious, mischievous desires. I certainly do not want you to remain prisoners forever, but I do pray that you develop a distaste for material pleasures. Please chant the holy name of the Lord. My blessing was meant to free you from your present miserable condition and to ensure that you remain happy in love of Krishna. I look upon everyone equally and wish the best for all living entities. I pray that you may develop unflinching devotion for Krishna. Do not be sad. You will be freed within 2 to 3 days. You may believe me. Once you leave the prison, you may live in the forest or you may live in your home, but always think of Krishna and try to cultivate spiritual life. Having showered his unrestricted mercy upon the prisoners, Haridas went before the Nawab. Because of his purity, Srila Haridas Thakur radiated a certain effulgence which the Nawab could not fail to notice. He rose respectfully when Haridas entered and offered the saint a seat. Although he himself had become quite confused, the Nawab asked Haridas, "What sort of mentality has overcome you? Knowing you have the good fortune to become a Muslim, why do you behave like a Hindu? We do not even accept rice touched by a Hindu. Yet you want to ignore your high birth and become a low-caste Hindu. To discard your own race, land, and religion for another is perverted. How do you expect to attain the liberated platform if you behave like this? I have decided to punish you according to the mandates of the Quran, so that you will be freed from your sins." Srila Haridas Thakur patiently listened to the threats and accusations of the Nawab, recognizing his words as the illusory potency of the Supreme Lord Vishnu. Without any apprehension, Haridas simply smiled at the Nawab and spoke in a sweet, soothing voice. "My dear sir, there is only one God for all living entities. The difference between the Muslim God and the Hindu God is in name only. According to knowledgeable Hindus and Muslims, and according to every scripture, be it Quran or Puran, God is one. He is the non-dual, eternal, transcendental, and absolute truth, infallible and perfectly complete, and in that capacity, he resides in everyone's heart. The omnipotent Lord is the supreme controller of everything. The living entity is moved by the desire of the Supreme Lord, and he acts and works only according to the Lord's design. The Supreme Lord's transcendental name, activities, qualities, associates, and abode are glorified according to different classes of spiritual instruction. But irrespective of the manner in which he is worshipped, the Lord accepts everyone's individual mood of surrender towards him. However, if one living entity feels hatred or envy toward another, he ultimately reflects those emotions in his relationship with the Lord. Whatever you see of me and my activities are direct manifestations of the Lord who guides me from within. Looking at it from another perspective, a person may be born in a family of Brahmins, but despite his high birth, he demonstrates the perverted behavior of a fourth-class, uncultured person. What can the Hindus do with such a person? He is forced to act in degrading ways because of his innate propensities, and he accordingly suffers or enjoys the reactions of his activities. What could be achieved by punishing him for activities which are an intrinsic part of his nature? My dear respected sir, please consider these points seriously, and if you still find me guilty, then punish me. The Muslim courtiers were sincerely moved by the honesty of Haridas Thakur's words and presence, but his wisdom could not penetrate the envious and sinful heart of the Qazi, who turned to the Nawab and instructed, "You must punish this man. He is evil and mischievous. Others will fall under his influence and become equally sinful. He will disgrace our Muslim religion and community. Therefore, he must be appropriately punished. If he wants to be excused, then let him preach from his own scripture. The Nawab tried again. My friend, just speak from your own scripture and accept the path. Then you will have nothing to fear. Otherwise, the Qazis present will force me to punish you. They will revile and insult you. Why should you let that happen? Whatever the Supreme Lord desires is destined to happen. There is no one who can check it, replied Hari Das. Each one of us suffers according to the degree of his previous offenses. You should know without a doubt that you are merely an instrument of the Lord's desire. Even if my body is cut into pieces and I lose my life, I will never give up chanting the Lord's holy name. The Nawab heard the fearless reply of Srila Hari Das Thakur and turned to the Qazi. Now what is your decision about him? Lash him in 22 marketplaces until he dies, replied the envious Qazi. There is no other judgment I find appropriate. If he lives despite the punishment, then I will conclude that our big scholar has spoken the truth. The sentries were called in and the orders boomed out. Lash him until he breathes his last. The sin a Muslim incurs by becoming a Hindu can only be punished by death. The Qazi's envious designs had fructified in the heart of the Nawab, and Srila Hari Das was dragged away by the sentries. From one marketplace to another, they beat him mercilessly, their black hearts consumed by hate for the pure devotee of the Lord. But Hari Das was a pure soul, completely surrendered to the Supreme Lord, so he faithfully chanted Lord Krishna's holy name. So absorbed was he in the fervent chanting that he did not feel any pain. Good-hearted and pious people could not bear to see the torture inflicted on such an innocent person. Some begged the sentries to stop, while others predicted, if they continue to torture this good man, the entire kingdom will be ruined. Many of them cursed the king to die, while some tried to stop the sentries physically. One person threw himself at the feet of the sentries and pleaded, I will give you any reward you like if you stop this merciless beating. But none of these protests evoked the slightest mercy from the sentries, who continued to drag Srila Hari Das Thakur from one marketplace to another, lashing him relentlessly. By the grace of Lord Krishna, Hari Das felt little pain in his body. Just like Prahlad in the Srimad Bhagavatam, who was tortured by demons, Hari Das never suffered at all. Not only was Hari Das freed from his pain, whoever remembers this story of Srila Hari Das will also be saved from the miseries of life. Throughout his ordeal, Hari Das's one emotion was pity for the sentries. O Lord Krishna, please be merciful upon these poor souls, so that they may not be punished because of me. Nothing could stop the insensitive sentries who were determined to see their assignment through to its deathly end. Yet for all their beating, Hari Das showed no signs of distress as he was absorbed in remembering the holy name of Lord Krishna. At last the guards had to stop in amazement. How can a human being survive such a brutal beating? Any ordinary man would have died after the beating we gave in the first two or three marketplaces. We have lashed him continuously through 22 marketplaces, and he still shows no sign of either pain or death. Occasionally, he looks up to smile at us. They concluded that he must be a saintly person. O Hari Das, they pleaded, because of you, we shall certainly be punished. When the Qazi sees that despite our beating, you are still alive, he shall certainly kill us instead. If my survival brings such terrible misfortune to you, replied Hari Das, then I shall definitely give up my body. Just see how I die. Srila Das Thakur immediately fell into trance. A pure devotee of the Supreme Lord possesses all mystic power, so without any hesitation, Srila Hari Das fell lifeless without a trace of breath. The Muslim sentries were astonished, but gladly brought the body of Srila Haridas to the Nawab. When the Nawab ordered the sentries to bury him, the Qazi protested, "No, if he is buried, he will be saved and ultimately gain entrance into heaven. Although he got the high birth of a Muslim, he behaved like a low Hindu. Therefore, it is proper for him to be thrown in the Ganga to suffer eternally, like the other lost Hindus. By being buried, he will become elevated and freed from his sin." On the Qazi's order, the sentries picked up the body of Haridas Thakur and carried him to the Ganga. Haridas remained in his deathly trance, meditating on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The spirit of Lord Krishna then descended into the body of Srila Thakur, and he became so heavy that it was impossible to move him. The strongest sentries came forward to push him into the waters, but he remained in deep trance and could not be moved. Haridas had already drowned in the ocean of love of Lord Krishna, and he had no perception of the world around him. He knew not if he were still embodied, or wandering somewhere in the universe, or deep in the water of the Ganga. Just like Prahlad Maharaj, Haridas Thakur had the spiritual ability to constantly remember the Supreme Lord. Such an extraordinary capability was not surprising, for Haridas' heart was the permanent residence of Lord Gaurachandra. This entire episode with Srila Haridas Thakur is a replication of the heroic activities of Sri Hanuman in Sri Lanka. Indrajit, Ravana's son, had sent the Brahmastra, a weapon given to him by Lord Brahma, to capture Hanuman. Hanuman could easily have escaped it, but to show respect to the potency of Lord Brahma, Hanuman allowed himself to be bound by the Brahmastra. Similarly, Srila Haridas Thakur could have escaped the punishment of the Muslims, but by allowing them to torture him, he taught the world a lesson. Despite the extreme miseries of life, one must never stop chanting the name of Krishna. Das Thakur was directly protected by the Supreme Lord Krishna, Govinda. Therefore, who could harm him? If one simply remembers the name of Haridas, not to mention his terrible ordeal at the hands of the Muslims, he becomes free from his own pain and misery. Most certainly, Srila Haridas Thakur was one of the closest and most important associates of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Chaitanya Chandra. Haridas floated downstream on the currents of the Ganga, and after some time he became conscious by the Lord's desire. Fully awakened and overwhelmed with ecstasy, he climbed the bank of the Ganga and proceeded towards Puglia, loudly chanting the name of Krishna as he walked. When the Muslims saw Srila Haridas, they were convinced that he possessed extraordinary mystic powers. Pure, happy feelings replaced the envy and hate in their hearts. They offered him obeisances, worshipping him as a very saintly person. By this worship, the Muslims became free from material entanglement. In the presence of the Nawab, Haridas stopped chanting and smiled compassionately at the Muslim ruler, who was standing respectfully with folded hands. In a humble and meek voice, the Nawab said, "I can now understand that you are truly a saintly person. You have realized the absolute truth, and you have seen the one Supreme Lord everywhere and in everyone. Absolute knowledge and liberation, which the mystic yogis and philosophers proudly boast, has been easily attained by you because you are a perfect human being. I have come just to see you, simply to beg forgiveness. Kindly forgive me for the offenses I have committed against you. Because you see everyone equally, you have neither friends nor enemies. There is no one in the entire world who can actually grasp your extraordinary position. You are a free man in every respect. You may stay wherever you wish, in a lonely hut or a cave or on the bank of the river Ganga. But please be merciful upon those of us who have committed this great offense against you. Everyone, whether elevated or wretched, automatically forgets about mundane life when he sees the lotus feet of Srila Haridas Thakur. The Muslims had been angry enough to kill him, yet they were transformed and they worshipped his feet, accepting him as a holy man. After forgiving and blessing them, Haridas went to Puglia. With the holy name resounding from his lips, he reached an assembly of Brahmins near Puglia. The Brahmins were overjoyed by his arrival, and they joined him in a roaring kirtan. As he danced in their midst, he felt ecstatic joy sweep through his body. Crying, shivering, laughing, falling unconscious, swelling with horripilation, and roaring loudly, he fell to the ground totally immersed in love of God. The Brahmins could not contain their unbounded joy. After some time, Srila Haridas calmed himself and spoke to the Brahmins who sat around him. My dear Brahmin friends, do not feel sad because of what happened to me. This punishment was certainly due me. I stood in the court and listened to the Muslims blaspheme my Lord. For this the Lord has punished me suitably. I am really very happy because my punishment should have been more severe. The Lord let me off very easily. One goes to hell if he hears blasphemy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. My sinful ears were filled with such blasphemy, and the Lord has given me the proper punishment so that I may never commit this offense again. Srila Haridas passed his time relishing the nectar of the holy name and giving his enlightened association to the Brahmins. Those Muslims who tortured Das Thakur and their families as well were all eventually destroyed. Haridas left the village and moved into a cave on the banks of the river Ganga, where he maintained himself on the sweetness of the holy name and the memory of the pastimes of the Supreme Lord. Daily he chanted a minimum of 300,000 names of Krishna. By the influence of the transcendental sound of the holy name and the holy presence of Srila Haridas Thakur, the cave was transformed into a Vaikuntha planet of the spiritual sky. In Haridas's cave lived a large and poisonous snake who emitted such strong vapors that not a soul could remain in the cave for more than a moment. People from the village came every day to visit Haridas, but they could not stay long enough to speak with him. Although the visitors were all driven away by the poisonous air, Haridas was completely oblivious to the presence of the snake. The Brahmins consulted one another about the foul air in the cave and then discussed the matter with some Ayurvedic physicians in Puglia. After some research, they determined that a poisonous snake had indeed built its home under Haridas's cave. The physicians felt strongly that Haridas should vacate his cave, for living with such a snake was improper. They joined the Brahmins and approached Haridas to explain the situation. Because of the vapors from a poisonous snake living underneath your cave, no one can remain here, they explained. You should also vacate this place and find a suitable cave to live in. I have been living in this cave for a long time, and I have never been inconvenienced by these vapors you speak of, replied Haridas. But if none of you can remain in the cave and it causes you such distress, then I shall leave here tomorrow. If it is true that a snake lives here, and if he doesn't leave by tomorrow, then I shall certainly go. I can assure you that one of us will leave this cave by tomorrow. Please do not worry about this problem any longer. I am concerned that all of you not waste your time in futile, mundane talks. Every moment should be utilized discussing topics on Krishna consciousness. In the course of this discussion, a miracle occurred. Evening had gradually descended around the Brahmins and Haridas when the snake slithered out of its hole. Its huge, frightening body, crossed with effulgent red, yellow, and blue stripes, and crowned with a brilliant gem, slid quietly past the Brahmins and left the cave forever. Its appearance was both awesome and attractive. And as it slithered past, the Brahmins remembered Krishna as their only shelter. After the snake left, the burning sensation from the poisonous air also vanished, and all the Brahmins were satisfied. Their faith in the extraordinary spiritual potency of Haridas Thakur swelled, for they understood that the snake had left because of Haridas's assurance to the visitors. Simply the sight of Haridas dissipates one's innate nescience and material entanglements. Out of his love for Haridas, the Supreme Lord never minimizes or neglects Haridas's words. There is another similar incident related by a snake charmer. One day in the courtyard of a rich man's house, this snake charmer was performing a snake dance. He was chanting a special mantra accompanied by musicians playing the mridanga and mandir. Haridas was passing by and stood to one side watching the snake dance. Although the snake charmer was an ordinary human being, by the influence of his mantra, he could dance as though he were possessed by the spirit of the king of the snakes, Anantashesh. With an enchanting melody, he sang about the pastime of Lord Krishna in the lake called Kalidas, where the Lord vanquished an evil serpent called Kaliya. Haridas listened intently to the pastime of his beloved Lord Krishna, and suddenly, moved by ecstasy, he fell unconscious to the ground. When he regained consciousness, he jumped to his feet and roared like a lion, dancing in ecstasy as he babbled with joy. The snake charmer was impressed by Haridas's manifestation of ecstatic symptoms and stood respectfully to the side. As the various symptoms of horripilation, crying, and shivering traversed his body, he rolled in the dust, crying in love for Krishna. He remembered how his beloved Lord had mercifully saved the snake, Kaliya, and as he floated in ecstatic trance, the people around him obliged by singing songs about the wonderful pastimes of the Lord. The snake charmer simply stood to the side, overcome by awe and reverence for Haridas. When his ecstasy subsided, Haridas left, and the snake charmer resumed his performance. Everyone who witnessed the ecstasy of Haridas felt spiritually exhilarated, and they smeared their bodies with the dust from his feet. However, one cunning and deceitful Brahmin in the crowd decided to cheat the people. "I will also dance here," he told himself. "I can see that the people are not very intelligent. They are offering so much respect to this low-born Haridas just because he dances and cries. If I, a Brahmin, also dance and cry, they will certainly worship me as well." The Brahmin threw himself on the ground and feigned unconsciousness as though he had fallen into trance. But as soon as he touched the ground, the dancing snake charmer became furious, picked up a stick, and began beating the Brahmin relentlessly. He struck him again and again on every part of his body until the Brahmin, howling in agony, got up and ran away just to save his life. The snake charmer then resumed his dance while the entire crowd stood dumbfounded. At last, a man with folded hands humbly requested the snake charmer to explain why he had stood respectfully to the side while Haridas danced, yet he had beaten the Brahmin for what seemed to be the same activity. The spirit of Anantashesh, who dwelt within the snake charmer, then spoke in glorification of Srila Das Thakur. "The subject matter of your inquiry is very confidential. Although such a topic is rarely discussed because of its highly esoteric nature, I shall nevertheless answer your question. When Srila Das Thakur was dancing in ecstatic trance, each one of us felt our respect and affection for him spontaneously increase. But the deceitful Brahmin was simply imitating Haridas in order to get some cheap adoration from the crowd. Not out of love for Krishna, but out of enviousness toward a pure devotee, the Brahmin threw himself on the ground and feigned ecstasy. Furthermore, he interrupted my dancing. Because he disturbed me and tried to imitate the pure devotee, I punished him severely. This arrogant and deceitful Brahmin has no love for Krishna. To receive the shelter of devotional service at the lotus feet of Lord Krishna, one has to become pure, free from deceit. By seeing Srila Haridas Thakur dance, one becomes liberated from material bondage. Even the Supreme Lord Krishna himself dances when he sees Srila Das Thakur dance. The entire universe becomes cleansed of all sinful reactions just by seeing Srila Haridas dance. He is truly worthy of his name, Haridas Thakur, the servant of the Supreme Lord Hari, Krishna, who shines eternally like a full moon in the heart of his devotee. Haridas is affectionate and compassionate towards all living entities, and he descends as the eternal servant of the Supreme Lord in each of the Lord's incarnations. He is totally free from any fault or offense towards the Supreme Lord or his devotees. Even in his dreams, he never commits an offense. A moment's association with Haridas can purify any living entity and assure him the eternal shelter of Lord Krishna's lotus feet. Even Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva constantly desire his association. Haridas appeared in the family of a lowly Muslim on the order of the Supreme Lord, just to teach human society that material designations like caste, creed, birth, status, and family position are all illusory, and pursuing them is futile. If a pure devotee of the Lord is born in a low-class family, he is no less worthy of worship. That is the injunction of the scriptures. On the other hand, if someone is born in a sophisticated family but does not worship the lotus feet of Sri Krishna, then his high birth is useless, for he lives just like a resident of hell. Just to prove the truth of these scriptures, Srila Haridas took birth in a low caste family. Prahlad Maharaj, one of the greatest devotees of the Lord, had previously appeared in a family of demons. And Hanuman, the greatest devotee of Lord Ramachandra, took birth in the monkey species. Similarly, Srila Haridas appeared in the family of Muslims. The demigods desire the touch of the pure and transcendental form of Srila Haridas Thakur, and Mother Ganga also prays that her water will be sanctified by his presence. But one need not touch Srila Das Thakur. Simply by seeing him, one is automatically freed from the eternal cycle of birth and death. Furthermore, one who sees a devotee who has taken shelter at the lotus feet of Srila Haridas Thakur is also granted freedom from material bondage. Neither 1,000 mouths nor 1,000 ears would be sufficient to describe and hear the wonderful qualities of Srila Haridas. You are a fortunate soul, for your inquiry gave me an opportunity to glorify the pure devotee and gave you the opportunity to hear the transcendental topic. From the moment a person speaks the name of Srila Haridas Thakur, his ascension to the supreme abode of Lord Krishna is guaranteed. Nagaraj, the snake charmer, then fell silent. The assembled Brahmins and pious gentlemen felt thoroughly satisfied by his glorification of Srila Haridas. Of course, Anantashesh is a pure Vaishnava devotee of the Supreme Lord and is always engaged in glorifying the Lord and his devotees. This was not his first occasion to describe the outstanding qualities of Haridas. The assembly accepted the Nagaraja's appraisal of Haridas, and the love each person felt for Haridas increased. Srila Haridas was a pure devotee of Lord Chaitanya, and although Sri Gaurachandra was yet to reveal the process of devotional service to the Supreme Lord, Haridas continued to demonstrate his love for Sri Krishna. People in general were disinterested in the process of devotional service, and they could not understand the purpose behind chanting the holy name of God. Because of a general apathy toward the holy name, the mood of devotional service was absent. People taunted and jeered at the Vaishnavas who engaged in kirtan, so the saintly devotees assembled in a quiet spot away from everyone where they could sing and dance undisturbed. Even then, atheistic people angrily condemned them. "These degraded Brahmins will completely destroy this entire country," they complained. "All this loud, sentimental singing and dancing will probably cause a famine in the land. These emotionalists sing like this just to fill their bellies, not realizing that Lord Vishnu takes rest during these 4 months of the rainy season. They will just disturb him, and in irritation, he will send some natural calamity. Can't these fools understand the disaster they could cause?" Another man threatened, "If there is an increase in the price of food grains, then I will catch them one by one and beat them soundly." It may be proper to chant loudly on the night of Ekadasi, but what is the use of this daily recitation of Govinda's names? Questioned another irritated atheist. The devotees felt genuine compassion for the atheistic people, and despite their harassment, the devotees continued the kirtans. Srila Haridas was one of those sincere devotees who felt sorry to see that the majority of the people in society were not the least inclined toward devotional service. He continued his loud chanting of Krishna's holy name, which the extremely sinful people in society found unbearable. Once in the village named Hari Nadi, an arrogant Brahmin offended Srila Haridas. He shouted angrily, "Hey, Haridas, why do you behave like this? Why must you chant so loudly? The actual injunction is to chant softly in your mind. Which scripture instructs you to chant loudly? Who has taught you this type of religious practice? Here is an assembly of scholars. You can ask them about the correct method of worship." Srila Haridas humbly replied, "I do not know the scriptural conclusions about the glories of the holy name of God. You must certainly know more than I. I can only repeat what I have heard from scholars like yourself. The principal effect of chanting the name of God loudly is that it purifies the soul 1,000 times more than any other form of worship. Nowhere in the scriptures is loud chanting of the holy name condemned. On the contrary, there are excellent benefits which have been described in many places. In one scripture it says, 'Loud chanting of Lord Krishna's name is 1,000 times better than silent chanting.' Why is the result of loud chanting magnified 1,000 times over any other process?" demanded the Brahmin. "My dear sir, please listen to the conclusions of the Vedas and Srimad Bhagavatam." As Srila Haridas spoke, he floated in the ocean of love of Krishna, and his explanations capsulized the essence of all scriptures. "O Brahman, please try to understand that when any living entity, be it human, animal, insect, or bird, hears the holy name chanted by a pure devotee of the Lord, he goes directly to the spiritual world, Vaikuntha, after leaving this body. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th Canto, chapter 34, verse 18, it says, 'O Lord, when your name is chanted by the unalloyed devotee, who has been purified by the touch of your lotus feet, and that holy name is heard even once by any living entity, it can immediately purify both the chanter and the listener. There is nothing disputable in the matter of the unalloyed devotee purifying other living entities. Lower species, which do not possess the ability to chant the Lord's name, can be liberated simply by hearing the name chanted by a pure devotee. One who chants the holy name to himself liberates himself only, but one who chants the Lord's name loudly liberates anyone who hears him. The sound of the Lord's name is beneficial for everyone. Therefore, the scriptures all assert that loud chanting of the Lord's name is 1,000 times more effective than any other religious process." Again, in the Naradiya Purana, there is a quote from Prahlad Maharaj saying, "I see perfect logic in the fact that a person who chants the Lord's name loudly is 1,000 times more pious than the person who chants to himself. One who chants softly liberates only himself, but one who chants loudly liberates himself and any other living entity who hears him. O Brahman, listen carefully. It is easy to understand that a person who acts for the benefit of the entire society, including the lower animals, is certainly on a higher religious platform than a person who is simply concerned with his own liberation. Only the human being has been endowed with the capacity to utter the Lord's name. An animal cannot. If loud chanting can liberate these unfortunate animals, who otherwise have no hope for liberation, then what is the harm in chanting loudly? A selfish person is interested in his own welfare, but a selfless devotee is concerned with everyone's welfare. If you understand this, you can easily determine who is on the higher platform. I must emphasize that loud chanting of the Lord's holy name is the most efficient type of chanting." The foolish Brahmin became even more infuriated by the unequivocal instructions of Srila Haridas. He angrily retorted, "O Haridas, you have now become the master of the Vedas. It seems you have propounded the 7th philosophical thought, the other 6 having been destroyed with the passing of time. It has been prophesied in the Vedas that at the end of Kali Yuga, a low-born Sudra will propagate the Vedas. but I see it already happening right before me. What is the need to wait for the end of the Kali Yuga? You deceive everyone by acting like a holy man, but all you do is visit the homes of householders and fill your belly. If I find your explanations unauthorized or unbona fide, according to Shastra, then I will cut off your ears and nose. Completely equipoised, Srila Haridas simply smiled at the harsh, revengeful words of the fallen Brahmin. Without another word, he walked away, chanting loudly the Lord's holy name. The scholars of the assembly were as sinful as that vicious Brahmin, for they neither accepted the correct, bona fide explanations of Srila Thakur, nor did they condemn the offensive words of the wretched Brahmin. Those men were Brahmins in name only, while in actuality they were demons. Their residence was hell, and they suffered untold misery in the hands of Yamaraj, the god of death. In Kali Yuga, the demons will be born as Brahmins who harass and offend pious people. The Varaha Purana says, in the Kali Yuga, demons find shelter in Brahmin families and torture the transcendentalists, who are rare souls. All the scriptures have strictly forbidden us to touch, hear, or worship persons who live in the guise of a Brahmin. One simply becomes contaminated by their contact. In the Padma Purana, it is mentioned, there is no need for a detailed explanation. Those Brahmins who are not devotees of the Lord should neither be respected nor touched by anyone. Meeting a non-devotee Brahmin is as contaminating as meeting a low-born dog-eater. On the other hand, a pure devotee of the Lord, born in any family or any class, can purify the entire universe. A few days after this incident with Srila Haridas, the fallen Brahmin contracted such a severe case of smallpox that his nose fell off. He was justly punished by Krishna for his offenses against the Vaishnav saint. Haridas sighed in deep depression over the sad state of the human society, which was engrossed in mundane life. For a long time, he had desired the association of other pure devotees, so he went to Navadvip, where the Vaishnavas were overjoyed to see him. Sri Advaitacharya Prabhu grasped him to his chest in a loving embrace, and the other devotees showered their affection on him, just as he reciprocated their emotions. The atheists continued their offensive criticism of the devotees, while the Vaishnavas continued their transcendental discussions on the subjects in the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. Anyone who listens with faith and devotion to these narrations will find eternal shelter at the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, Sri Gaurachandra. Sri Krishna Chaitanya and Nityananda Prabhu are my life and soul. I, Vrindavan Das, humbly offer this song at their lotus feet.